Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway. So welcome back to this week's episode of Paris History avec a Hemingway, and I am here with Claudine Hemingway to bring you more fascinating history of women who maybe did not get any credit throughout the decades, and maybe you want to learn a little bit more about the creative women in French history. So today we are talking about someone very special. Her name is Elizabeth Vigée Lebrun, and she was actually the portrait painter for Marie Antoinette. And she actually got a lot of people knew about her. She was kind of famous, and she did a lot for a woman during that period, especially as an artist, because we have to remember women were not allowed to do things back then. So she became a famous French portrait painter, and I'm going to let Claudine talk a little bit about her life.
Hello. Yes, Elizabeth is, yeah, she's another one of my, I think when we first talked about doing this and I made the list, she was definitely like one of the first like five people I put on the list. She's pretty, I love her paintings. So Elizabeth Vigée Lebrun was born in 1755 in Paris, and her father was an artist. She was born in the first, what we know as the first now, she was baptized in the Saint-Eustache Church. So she, you know, was a Paris girl from the very beginning.
I love that. Those are rare.
Yeah. They did send her pretty quickly out to be raised by nurses. Basically, they always call them nurses back then, but we would like a nanny, I think is what we would say now. And she didn't see her family for like the first 8 years of her life.
Was that normal?
I think so. But it just seems so strange. Like, okay, yeah. Here we go.
She came from a really like rich family?
Yeah, they were, they were kind of rich. I mean, I don't think they, you know, they weren't like royalty or aristocrats, but they, you know, I don't think that they weren't poor.
Hmm. Well, they skipped the difficult period of raising a toddler. Good for them.
Yes, exactly. So her father ended up dying when she was just 12 years old because he swallowed a fishbone.
But he died from a fishbone.
Yeah, I mean, that's gonna take. Next time I'm having my salmon and I find one of those bones, I'm gonna think twice about it.
Seriously, I was gonna have salmon tonight. Never mind.
I know. Be careful. But he was only 12. Her mom quickly remarries right after it happens, and so she remarries this guy, and he was not the greatest guy. But when she was very young, her father, because he was also an artist, was kind of her first teacher, and then realized, you know, like, oh, well, she, you know, she needs more than I could give her. I'm just not, you know, he could tell what talent she had at a very early age. So her father sent her to Gabriel Briand, who was a member of the Royal Academy and had his atelier in the Louvre. Back then, there was a period of time for quite a while that artists actually just lived in the Louvre. Like David, a bunch of them just actually lived and they had their workshops inside the Louvre. And this was also, you know, this is also before, you know, it becomes the Louvre that we know of it today. Mm-hmm. Before it was basically a museum. But even at the start, when it was a museum, there were still a few that lived there. Like huge names like Jacques-Louis David, a bunch of people.
And there's still a school in the Louvre, but they don't live there.
Yeah, they don't live there. So she'd go to the Louvre, you know, to go to work with Gabrielle. And she ended up meeting a lot of different artists there at the same time. And she would also become a copyist, which was what, you know, when we've talked about a lot of these people, they've all done this. So they just go into the Louvre with your easel and you're copying paintings. She was really loved all of like the Dutch masters and a lot of the portraits they did. That was kind of her, what she was really drawn to. So she did her very first portrait at the age of 15.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful, like you just think of like you know, my nephew couldn't do that at 50.
Seriously. I think I was still playing with Barbies.
So she, you know, she was kind of known pretty early on of a woman that was like going to push it, you know, push the barriers and would take chances. So she really wanted to get into the Royal Academy, but there was no way. They were just like, nope, that's not going to happen. So she instead went to the Academy of Saint-Luc, which was founded in 1391. And she did this when she was 15 years old.
Amazing. I'm surprised they let women do all this stuff. Was this normal for women to be doing these things?
No, I mean, they'd have a very, very few women that they'd even allow in there, into any of the royal, like the Royal Academy would only allow a few women in a year, if even that.
Wow. So she was like a superstar in the art world from the beginning.
Yeah. So she, with her, you know, her living with her mother and her stepfather, they moved to Rue Saint-Honoré. And she was painting a lot of portraits. You know, she's 15, 16, 17 years old. She's doing all of these portraits of people and making pretty good money, because a portraitist would actually, because it's mostly aristocrats and the bourgeois that would want these paintings. So she was making some pretty good money, and her stepfather would just basically take it. Like, just so
he knew what he had. He said, this girl's going to make me some money.
Exactly. So, a few years later, they moved to Rue de Clary, and when they were there, they ended up meeting, she met Jean-Baptiste Lebrun. Jean-Baptiste Lebrun was the great nephew of Charles Lebrun. Charles Lebrun, he was basically one of the chief painters to Louis XIV. When you look at like the Galerie d'Apollon in the Louvre, and you look at even Versailles, most of that is from Charles Lebrun. Like, even if he wasn't the one who painted it, it was basically his design, his idea of what all of these things were going to look like.
It's the perfect mate for her.
Yeah. So, this is, you know, a huge, huge, big deal. So his great nephew was Jean-Baptiste Lebrun, and that is ended up, he, like, they started, you know, seeing each other, or whatever you would call it back then.
Courting.
You know, he asked her to marry her, even though he already was married in Holland.
What?
Yeah. So at first she was like, she really didn't want to. She really wasn't interested, but she wanted to get away from her family, especially her stepfather. And so she said, okay, you know, I'll marry you.
So you could have a double marriage?
Yeah. So in January 1776, they were married at Saint-Eustache.
So what about the other lady?
I don't know. It's kind of like, I probably spent a couple hours just trying to get to the bottom of just that, and I could not find anything.
Kind of buried history.
Buried secret.
Scandalous.
So that same year, though, she ended up getting her first commission from the Count de Provence, who would later be Louis the 18th of France. But he wanted her to paint a portrait of him. And then that was her way. She got into basically the court of Versailles. Do that.
What a great connection.
Yeah, very, very good connection for her. So in 1778, she ended up becoming the official portrait painter of Marie Antoinette.
That is another really great connection up until the French Revolution.
Yeah. And when you see like the most famous paintings of Marie Antoinette were done by Vigée Le Brun.
I love that they are all done by a woman, because I've seen them and they're so beautiful, especially if you visit like the castles and things like that. And I never knew they were done by a woman.
Yeah, they're so beautiful. And Marie really, because Vigée Le Brun has a very soft and delicate approach to paintings and portraits. They're all very, like, you just kind of, when you look at them, you're kind of like, you'll just exhale, because it's just, there's something just so beautiful and comforting about them. Mm-hmm. And that's Marie Antoinette really liked that. So in 1783, she had, you know, painted her. And if you, you know, when we talked about Marie Antoinette before in the podcast, we talked about how she wanted her dressmaker to make her these just like, you know, the muslin dress that's just white and kind of, you know, carefree and easy for her to wear when she is at the Petite Trine on the Hameau. And so Vigée painted her in one of those, like basically one of those dresses. And she, you know, took it to the Salon of 1783, and people freaked out.
In a good or bad way?
Bad way. Because the queen should not be seen, and basically her underwear, you know, that was basically contributed to underwear back then.
Yeah.
It was not the way to present her. And how dare this woman paint her in that way as well. And so it caused this huge thing. She ended up taking it, having to take it out of the salon. But because of that, she became even more known. And then her prices even were like able, she was able to skyrocket her commission price.
Bad PR is still PR.
I know. Yeah, exactly. So she replaced that. She did another painting of her. Basically, it's almost exactly the same painting, but she's wearing this bluish gray dress. And it is probably one of the most popular paintings ever used when anybody talks about Marie Antoinette. Everybody is, she's holding the one rose in her hand. She's wearing a hat. She's looking at you. When I first saw it, it's in the Petite Trianon, the original. When I first saw it, I like literally almost cried because it's this painting I've seen like 1,000 times in books and everywhere. And so when I first saw it, I was just like, oh my gosh,
a real thing.
Yeah. I do that a lot though. If you follow along on the podcast, that happens.
Well, I think it's great. It means you're not a sociopath.
Yeah. I think like when you see the real thing in person, it's just kind of like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, you can't compare it to the books.
No. So, but she, you know, she still really wanted to be, you know, she's painting Marie Antoinette. She's painting, you know, the royal family. She's painting all these people. She still wanted to be a part of the Royal Academy. And they were just like, no. And there was a lot of men because she was getting so well known and so sought after. A lot of the men were even more against her. So Marie Antoinette talked to Louis XVI because the Royal Academy was attached to the crown. And so she talked to Louis XVI and he basically went around them and said, no, you'll let her in.
Nice. So they were all for it because she'd been painting them for so long. Like he trusted her and they admired her.
Yeah. So she ended up being one of the first women, one of the very few women that they actually allowed into the Royal Academy at that time.
I mean, if the king gives you an endorsement, I think you're pretty set.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially when he's the one in charge of it.
And he's like next to God in their eyes.
Yeah. So she was, you know, then that just gives her even more, you know, that gives even more of a, you know, appeal to people. So she ended up painting, you know, kept painting the family. She also painted artist Hubert Robert, who is also one of my very favorites. He painted all of these, like he did all these great architectural paintings. He did a lot of the paintings where of the Louvre. He was involved in the Louvre of like the redecorating of the Grand Gallery. He painted a painting of the Grand Gallery where it has skylights, which it didn't at the time. And later on, the Grand Gallery was remodeled to kind of to match more of his painting.
But so she's also an interior designer.
Yeah. So but she did this like beautiful, beautiful portrait of him. That's like one of my favorites.
Oh, very cool. And we can see all this on your website after.
Yes. Afterwards. Yeah. But so, and so, you know, here's, we're getting close to the revolution. So
uh-oh.
In 1789, she was at Madame du Barry's chateau, which was outside of Paris, which, as we remember, Madame du Barry was like, you know, the arch nemesis of Marie Antoinette. She was, du Barry was the mistress of Louis XV. And so she was there, you know, out at her chateau. She was doing, you know, some painting for her. The sans-culottes broke into the chateau, going into the basement, like destroying a bunch of her paintings and a bunch of her, like all of her paint and a bunch of other stuff. And it basically was also right about the start of the revolution.
Yikes. So it's time to leave.
Yeah. So she ended up in 1780, she and her husband had a little girl and her name was Julie. And so at this point, you know, she took Julie and they got out because anybody associated at all with Marie Antoinette or Louis XVI was basically like, get out of Dodge. Like they're coming for you. You know, if you, you know, the hairdresser, the, you know, anybody that did anything for them was basically on the list. They were going to get.
And I guess the word was spreading. Were they starting to like cut people's heads off at that time? Or was it just like, you could feel the fire coming?
Yeah, they were. So yeah, at that time, I mean, the guillotine kind of was around for quite a while, but yeah, I mean, that's basically like anybody close to them was losing their head. So she got out, she took her daughter, her husband stayed back. He, in their apartment, you know, they had this building and they had this apartment and he ran, he had like an antique dealership out of there. He also would appraise and, you know, paintings and stuff. He stayed behind. So she and Julie left and they headed down to Italy. and stayed down there for quite a long time. They went from Florence to Rome to Venice. She was still painting the whole time, sending paintings back to Paris to, you know, when they would have the salon. It was during the Revolution that the Louvre actually opened as a museum. So, you know, she's sending all these paintings back. But of course, her paintings of the royal family were like new way. Like nobody wanted to see those.
I was gonna say, don't be sending those pictures.
Yeah, those aren't going good. So she, but she kept sending all these different paintings while she was down there in Italy. You know, she's like hobnobbing with all the other French artists that escaped as well. Which is pretty, you know, pretty cool.
I was gonna say, yeah, that's super cool just to be hanging out with all like your idols. Yeah. And I'm surprised they didn't go after her husband, just knowing the relation, like he was safe the whole time.
Yeah, I think he was dead. He was you know, he definitely was one of those, you know, a collaborator. So he was kind of trying to work with them. They would bring him in to help to appraise art. And tell them what they had and stuff. And actually, he ended up becoming one of the curators at the Louvre. And actually, because he was doing that, he was able to kind of save a lot of her paintings. And get her paintings eventually would get them back into, you know, in to be seen.
I love that he was running an antique shop in the 1700s. Like, you are the antique.
I know now. It's like, what?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, what was an antique back then?
Yeah, it was an antique back then.
Yeah, but she was also, she was on this list of basically like enemies of the French state. And it was like a list of like 140,000 names.
That was a lot.
That was just basically like, if you come back into France, like you're a dead duck. Like you're
so it was like, it was a witch hunt, basically.
Basically. Yeah. So she, you know, kept going. She was ended up going, to Russia. She moved to Russia. She was there for a while. She was painting, the family of Catherine the Great. She lived there for 6 years and she was kept painting them. One day she painted a picture of her granddaughter, Catherine the Great's granddaughters, with bare arms.
Ooh, more scandal. I like that she was pushing the bar during everything.
I know, showing a little extra skin there. And Catherine freaked out. Catherine the Great freaked out. And so she repainted over it and she painted sleeves on it.
Well, I mean, you got to keep Catherine the Great happy.
I know. She was another one. But she was supposed to sit down. She was supposed to paint for Catherine and paint a portrait of Catherine, and Catherine died. So she didn't get to paint Catherine the Great. But in 1801, her name was finally taken off the list. Her husband actually was trying, even though they didn't have a great marriage, he was trying to get talking to a bunch of different people to get her removed from the list. And, you know, that didn't obviously go very well. And then by 1801, at that point, she was able to return to Paris.
Good news.
And she ended up, you know, hooking up again with her good old friend, Louis the 18th. That, you know, she painted so long ago. And he was exiled over in London, and she would kind of like follow around, he and his family from London to Switzerland, painting them.
Very cool. I mean, what a life.
I know. Could you imagine?
She was like a rock star painter. Do we have any idea how much money she was making?
No, but she made a lot. She made quite a bit of money because, you know, she did, I think it was like, almost 1,000 paintings, 600 of them are portraits.
That's wild. I mean, she was basically a prodigy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's starting at 15 years old.
And working with royalty, like, her whole life.
Yeah, exactly. She was working with Louis the 18th. Then she, in 1805, she painted Caroline Murat, who was the sister of Napoleon.
Wow.
And so she, you know, she was kind of getting into all these, you know, hoi polloi people, which were very good for her. She, you know, Louis the 18th was trying to do a lot of stuff at, you know, to bring back, you know, the story and, you know, rebuild the image of his brother, Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette. So while he was doing that, that's when like her paintings were able to come back and be shown.
So they started allowing like pictures of kings and queens to be shown again.
Yeah. He was trying to rewrite, you know, that and make it, you know, that's when he made the Chapelle Expiatoire and all of those different places. So, but in 1786, she had painted a portrait of herself and her daughter. And, you know, here she is again, causing waves. She paints this picture of her daughter. It's this beautiful picture of holding her daughter on her lap. and her lips were opened and there was a slight smile and you could see some of her teeth.
So that was completely absurd.
Oh yeah. It was not something you ever did. It was not, it was like, it's also one of the first like smiles in all of Western art. But
what?
It was
also, so cool. So I people know. Didn't smile. Why didn't they smile? Because it was too hard to hold?
I don't know. I mean, I have pictures. We're really lucky to have pictures of people in our family from even like the 1800s and before. And they all look so grim. They're just smiling. It is just kind of, it's kind of strange. But
it's strange.
So it caused like a huge, people were like completely freaked out by it because it basically was also like one of the oldest forms in art was basically the, you know, mother and child, the Madonna and child. Mm-hmm. And here she is. And it's not like she has this big cheesy grin. I mean, it's basically like her lips are barely open.
She was smizing.
Yeah. And you could just see a little bit of teeth, but it freaked people out again.
I love that she was turning up all the heat in the world with painting. It's so cool.
Yeah. And that painting is also in the Louvre today too. So you can see that one too. But when she returned in 1809, she ended up at, for some part of the time, she had a country house just outside of Paris, and she still had her place in Paris where she would hold salons and have people come over, and, you know, like all the other artists, friends and everybody would come over, you know, on the Saturday night and hang out.
That's so fun. I love that she like started her own salon, another first for women in art.
I mean, she was definitely really ahead of her time for that.
Do we have any quotes from her? Like, I'm sure she was like so ballsy.
She ended up writing a book later on in her life. I was trying to see if I could find it. And I think there was like multiple volumes of it. So she wrote a few different volumes of it.
She's quite the artist.
Yeah. She, in 1813, she and her husband divorced. And so she, you know, finally was on her own. And in 1815, Louis the 18th was able to return back to Paris. And that's when he was kind of restoring the history of his brother and sister-in-law and bringing her paintings back. They were, you know, at that point they were hung in the Louvre and at Versailles and at Fontainebleau. And they all, you know, it was basically like a resurgence of everything. And it was, you know, she was quite a bit older at this period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. But everything was coming back together nicely. And yeah. I'm surprised she was able to get divorced because a lot of the women we talk about get divorced. And I'm like, I thought that was super illegal back then, or at least difficult.
Yeah. I think it was very difficult. So I think she was trying for a long time to get divorced from him from like when she left, but it obviously took years and years and years for it to happen.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. Yeah. I wonder if he was taking all her money as well.
Yeah, yeah. Her daughter, she and her daughter, she wanted her daughter to marry a certain person and she didn't want to. And she wanted to marry this Russian guy. And it was basically totally against what Elizabeth wanted. And so she ended up like her daughter Julie married him. And at that point, they kind of became estranged. So in the last years, and then a few years later, Julie, her daughter, died.
How'd she die?
Yeah, she died. She died in 1819. I couldn't really find a reason why she died. There's not a lot about her, other than just the fact that, you know, she was the daughter. But she did die in 1819. They weren't very close. The next year, her Elizabeth's brother also died as well. And her whole estate and a collection in her will, she ended up leaving it to her niece. So
lucky niece. She could be rich.
Yeah. So a few years later, she ended up dying. Vijay LeBron died. She had brain tumors for quite a long time that ended up causing her to lose her sight.
That's so sad. How sad for a painter. I wonder if it's because they were all like licking the tip of their paintbrush and it was all like poisonous paint.
Yeah, probably.
Tumors.
Yeah, exactly. But she died in 1842. And so she was 86 years old.
Oh, wow. She lived a long time.
She lived a very long time.
And she outlived the French Revolution after painting the kings and queens. That's really cool.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, she painted some 30 paintings of Marie Antoinette. And she painted, you know, the ones of just Marie. She painted ones of Marie with her children. She had quite a few, you know, she did, you know, that was definitely her biggest thing. That's what most people know her for. But the fact that she did 660 other portraits of people is just astounding.
Do we know she ever remarried or fell in love?
She didn't. There was a rumor that she ended up, there was a close friend of hers that lived with her. So there was a rumor at one point that there was a relationship with her and her friend, but she never, you know, she stayed pretty kind of quiet. I think the brain tumors and losing her sight there those last few years and being estranged from her daughter probably had to be pretty hard.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. And it sounds like she needs the extra help because of, you know, she's going blind. She had brain tumors.
Yeah. Yeah.
She lived a long time. I mean, good for her after all of that.
She lived a very long time. And, you know, the legacy she left behind that we could still today see, especially in the Louvre, is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it means so much more knowing that a woman painted all those gorgeous paintings of Marie Antoinette, and they became really good friends. I could see why, because they were both kind of revolutionary in many ways.
Yeah, I mean doing the painting of her in the muslin dress is, and how, I mean, that just completely like caused so many problems. And then that same, you know, what we had talked about before, that same dress, you know, is what everybody ended up wanting. All the women wanted that. And that's what most of the women were wearing, you know, cheering for her the day her head was getting cut off.
So crazy how fashion works.
Yeah. And I think it's probably, you know, people probably wouldn't have really known about that had it not been for that painting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you can see how far back scandals go and how it affects society in general.
Yeah.
Even without the internet, you know, they saw the painting.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about it was called the guillotine haircut, because before women went to the guillotine, you know, they'd chop all their hair off. And then that became a fad for a while, like women with really short hair. And they called it the guillotine haircut, which I don't think that'd be something like, I'm looking for the guillotine.
That's so dark.
I know. Yeah, it's interesting where the roots of some of these things come from.
Ugh, it's terrifying. Thank God people have iPhones today so they don't have to go to the guillotine show and be inspired by the fashion.
Exactly. Gosh,
it's terrifying.
Yeah. For many reasons, it's good that we don't have to do that.
Just stick to cat and puppy videos.
Exactly, exactly.
Ugh. Well, thank you so much, Claudine, for teaching us again about another fabulous creative woman in French history. And tune in next week, guys.
Thank you for listening to Paris History avec A. Hemingway. If you want to find out some more, you could always find me on my Instagram page, Claudine Bleu Blanc Rouge, and that's B-L-E-U, as in the French way to spell it. And each day I post a daily history lesson about a person or a place or something in Paris, or it's lots of fun facts. And then also at claudinehemingway.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter there.